Call the House Special Committee on Energy back to order. The time is 7:11. Members present are Representative Tuck, Representative Johansson, Representative Ramirez, Representative Dahlstrom, Representative Peterson, Co-Chair Edgman, myself, Representative Millet. We are here to take up the CS we adopted yesterday on House Bill 182, Gretzky. And what we're going to start out with this morning is, on your desk, you should have a sectional that was done by Ron Miller and my staff, Jeff Turner. And we're just going to have a... Jeff, did you want to walk through it? Or, okay. We will have Ron Miller, who's online. Ron, are you online? Walk us through the sectional of the changes to the CS that we had drafted. Does everybody have a copy of the sectional before them? Ron, are you awake?
Yes, ma'am.
Good morning. Thank you for being up with us so early. Ron is a consultant to the legislature. He works for Speaker Chenault and has been very helpful with us on Gretzky and getting us through this process. So with that, Ron, if you want to just go ahead and walk us through the changes.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. For the record, my name is Ron Miller, consultant to House and Senate leadership on energy issues this session. The committee substitute before you is significantly different than the last version of House Bill 182. HB 182 provides for the organization of energy and transmission corporations by interconnected public utilities, authorizes the organization of the Greater Rail Belt Energy and Transmission Corporation, and authorizes the Alaska Energy Authority to contract with energy and transmission corporations to operate power projects of the authority. Section 1 of the bill becomes effective January 31, 2011, under Section 5, and that effectiveness is contingent on four or more interconnected utilities filing letters of intent under Section 4 of the bill. And this section amends AS 42 to add a new chapter, and that's AS 4250. And that establishes in statute the purposes, powers, and duties of an energy and transmission corporation. The new corporation may acquire, operate, or maintain Alaska Energy Authority projects, just like a joint action agency under existing statute. And it also may plan for, recommend, coordinate, and otherwise address power generation and transmission for the electrically interconnected service territories of its member utilities. The version before the committee, that's version P, has removed the exemption from RCA oversight. There was a five-year sunset in the last version of the bill that received discussion before the committee, provided 5 years of RCA oversight with an automatic sunset. That has been removed, so the corporations created under this new chapter are subject to RCA regulation.
Ron, can I just interject real quick? So under this new CS, the RCA regulation doesn't get reviewed and doesn't sunset. It's just a permanent addition to the bill. So RCA oversight is permanent under this legislation?
That's correct, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you.
Okay. Getting back to Section 1, it addresses the organization of these new types of energy and transmission corporations created, authorized by this new chapter of AS 42. And that includes the purposes of the corporation, the composition of the board of directors, conduct of board meetings, the corporation's officers and employees, corporate membership, articles of incorporation and bylaws, and general powers of the corporation. And the major changes in this committee substitute over the last version that the committee saw I'll highlight some of those. That's in the board of directors. It's been expanded. Previously, it was 13, with 12 coming from the utilities. After the committee heard considerable testimony that there should be more public members or stakeholder members on the board. It's on page 3, line 24. It's 7 public directors appointed by the governor to represent ratepayers and other interested groups within the service area of the corporation. The previous version of this legislation provided 1 public member, and the governor appointed that public member from a list of candidates submitted to the governor by the utilities. This allows the governor to more freedom in appointing public members to this board. Another change regarding those public members was in previous legislation, previous drafts, the public member appointed by the governor could actually be removed by the other board members for cause. And this version gives that authority to the governor. The term of the public members are 4 years. However, the governor can remove a public member for cause and then appoint a replacement. Another change is on page 4, line 12, and I believe the committee has a draft amendment before them addressing that. A language change was left out of the work draft P, where it says directors may not receive a salary, and that was changed to directors shall receive no salary, because may not seemed a bit permissive as opposed to mandatory, or if you have shall receive no, and that was just some clarifying language. Getting on to officers and employees, no major changes in this section. That begins on page 5, line 21, is section 4250.040. With the exception that the executive director or any other employee of this new corporation, Energy and Transmission Corporation, no state employee can be hired within 2 years of leaving state employment by this new corporation, and that's to avoid any appearance of conflict of interest for anyone who may have been involved in organizing Gretzky or any other corporation like this that would immediately leave state employee and then go to work for Gretzky or an energy and transmission corporation.
Hey, Ron, I have a question on that. We have a member that was concerned about National Guard, State Defense Forces. It doesn't negate military organizations from being, especially the National Guard, because those, even though that's a quasi-state organization, it doesn't. I mean, we don't need to say in their state what a state employee means. There's a definition already in statute, I believe, isn't there?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair. And I believe National Guard, that's considered a military service. I don't think a National Guards person receives a state pension.
Correct.
Do they? I mean, that's the regular military pension.
Right. Okay. And then Representative Edgeman had a question back on page 4. Representative Edgeman.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. On line 12 on page 4, directors may not receive a salary, and I know there's an amendment from the committee, but the sentence continues to read, but the corporation may pay directors a meeting fee, per diem, and travel expenses. And I was wondering, given that the corporation as a whole is going to be non-profit, whether we need to have some kind of a qualifier before meeting fee, reasonable, adequate, commensurate, whatever it might be, Ron. But have you considered that in your reading of the bill?
Co-Chair Edgman, that's certainly a reasonable addition to the language. I believe there is similar language in other state and other statutes regarding nonprofits, or regarding I think there may be some language regarding meeting fees for state corporations. I'd have to check that out, but I mean, I've seen those in articles of incorporation and bylaws, so that certainly would appear to be a reasonable addition.
Madam Co-Chair, then when the time is appropriate, I would offer a conceptual amendment to that effect.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead, Ron.
Okay. Let's see. We're at officers and employees. The next section on page 6, line 4, begins membership. And there were no changes in the version P from the last several versions the committee has seen, nor have there been any changes in the next section. That's page 7, line 8, where section 4250.060, Articles of Incorporation, began, as well as bylaws. Indemnification. Page 8, line 9, that remains the same. General powers of the corporation, that's one of the more substantive sections of Section 1. Line 12, page 8, Section 4250.090. And what you see there, Madam Chairwoman, let me get to my notes. On page 9, General Power 9, begins on line 10, procure fuel supplies, fuel storage capacity, and fuel transmission resources, except that fuel supplies, fuel storage capacity, and fuel transmission resources may not be procured with state funds. There was concern among committee members that we could be creating a state-funded corporation that could compete with private corporations in terms of fuel, natural gas storage, other types of fuel storage, pipeline companies, or oil and gas companies, and so that language at the end of that item 9 may not be procured with state funds was added to clarify that this new generation or energy and transmission corporation couldn't get a bunch of state grants and go out and start buying state oil and gas leases or building pipelines with them to compete with existing pipeline companies, or put up natural gas storage in competition with the private sector.
Okay. Any questions to this point, members? Okay, Ron.
Okay, continuing in the general power section, On page 10, line 24, it's item 24, discusses developing operating standards. And there was considerable concern among some of the witnesses that testified that these operating standards, if there was no uniformity or no oversight by the RCA, they could be used somehow to keep independent power producers from connecting to the intertie system. And so that language was changed to develop operating standards approved by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska that are applicable to all public utilities electrically interconnected to the service territory of the corporation. And on that page, the general power to create subsidiary corporations was deleted. I think there was a concern at the last hearing by some committee members that this wondering how far afield this new energy and transmission corporation could get from its core purpose by creating subsidiary corporations.
Hey, Ron, I have a question. If you go back to page 10, item number 20 and item number 23 apply to the state, the United States, foreign countries, or other proper agencies for permits, license, right-of-ways, or approval necessary to construct, maintain, and operate electrical power and related services, and obtain, hold, and reuse the licenses and permits in the same manner as other similar operators, and also 23, conduct its business and exercise its power inside and outside the state. What is the purpose of 20 and 23 under GRETC? If we've taken away the ability to have subsidiaries, shouldn't in conforming language, shouldn't 20 and 23 be also removed?
Well, Madam Co-Chair, that bears some consideration, but the way that was explained to the committee at a previous hearing by, I don't know if it was Mr. Strandberg or Mr. Bjornquist from the Attorney General's office, was that this language allowed the GRETC or an energy and transmission corporation to purchase equipment from, you know, outside the state or outside the country to acquire licenses for that equipment.
Okay, good enough.
Continuing on with changes, on page 11, line 23, page 11 is where provisions begin for this, the GRETC or the Energy and Transmission Corporation to draft plans, integrated resource plans, long-range fuel supply plans, long-range capital improvement plans, and long-range financial management plans. That's sections 4250.110 to 4250.140. And language was added to each of those four sections in section C of each section, that the various plans be made available to the public. As the language previously read, the plans were available on the internet to members of the corporation, the governor, the legislature, and ratepayers. And there was some testimony offered during public hearings that the public should be allowed to have access to those plans. However, if you know, one could ask, if it's on the internet, how can you keep, you know, the public from accessing it? I don't know if access codes would be provided by the corporation or not. And that was just language to clarify that the public should also have the ability to review these plans. On page 12 begins the section 4250.150 at line 29, financing arrangements. That language was changed state that the corporation may use any financing arrangements permitted by law in achieving the purposes and objectives of the corporation, may develop financing arrangements for individual projects, and may request that the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority issue revenue bonds for the corporation's projects. That last section, that's number three at line three on page 13, that's identical language to what's contained in current joint action agency statutes. What was taken out was language regarding ability to have the state of Alaska purchase debt instruments of the corporation, guaranteed debt, have the corporation's debt backed by moral obligation of the state. And that language was deleted because of concerns over the precedent for having the state essentially underwrite the debt of a private nonprofit corporation. And that's what these new energy and transmission corporations are. They are exempt from many taxes, and they're considered PNPs, or private nonprofit corporations. And so, you know, will the legislature have a lineup at the door at the next session if the state is to get into the business of underwriting the debt for private nonprofit corporations in the state? Back to page 13, line 5, where it talks about the state pledging to and agreeing that with any lender to the corporation that the state will not essentially impair the rights and remedies of the lender of a lender to the corporation. And the pledge may be included in a contract between a lender and the corporation, and that pledge is not a guarantee, surety, promise, undertaking, or assurance of repayment or performance of an obligation of the corporation. Essentially, that that language was from was left out of subsequent committee substitutes. It's language from the original Gretzky bill that was introduced in 2009, and it's was put back in to clarify that the state is not going to act to impair the debt of the corporation. However, it's not going to guarantee repayment of the corporation's debt as well.
Okay.
Okay. Madam Chair, on page 13, line 20, tax exemption, there was language added that nothing in that section exempted the corporation from payment of taxes, royalties, or assessments of the state applicable to natural gas storage, fuel pipelines, underground fuel resources, or it should say fuel in other natural storage. There was a word left out of the draft CS, and Wood explained for the committee that you know, that is probably an oversight on my part since I didn't catch it after it came from the drafters yesterday, but we were working on a pretty tight schedule to get this out to the committee.
So, Ron, the insertion of fuel between natural and storage on line 28, is that what you're talking about?
It'd be or fuel in other natural storage. I'd have to take a look at that language to... that was language, similar language from a previous committee substitute.
Okay.
And the exemption also does not apply to a municipal public utility. Wouldn't exempt that municipal public utility from payment of an applicable municipal utility service assessment, or MUSA or MUSA. In the case of the rail belt, you have Municipal Light and Power here in Anchorage that pays a municipal utility service assessment similar to a PILT or payment in lieu of taxes. And there was some concern, I believe, raised by the municipality of Anchorage whether that section would apply to MUSA. Continuing on page 14, under beginning of line 6 on page 14, section 425190, right to examine books and records, under previous versions, that right was extended to not only to members of the corporation ratepayers, but also the general public. And there was no explanation of why that language was removed in the final few committee substitutes we saw. So that language was added back in, that except as provided in C of this section, members, ratepayers, and the public may at a reasonable time and for any proper purpose examine and make copies of the books and records of the corporation at the principal office of the corporation. There are no other changes from previous versions of this legislation that the committee has seen until you get to page 18. Line 8, Madam Co-Chair, excuse me, it's line 5. It talks about under the conditional effects and the effective date. Previously, it was July 30, 2010. That's been pushed back to December 31, 2010, and that's to allow the promulgation of regulations by the Alaska Energy Authority to apply to this letter of intent in form and substance. Again, Section 4 is a very important section with regard to the entire bill because the effective date of this bill is contingent on sections 3 and 4. The bill, sections 1 and 2, the meat of the bill, they don't take effect unless 4 or more of the rail belt utilities deliver to AEA a letter in form and substance. And previously it said in form and substance as approved by AEA or established by AEA. There was no criteria in that language, so you're left to wonder, well, who's going to establish this form and substance? What will be the conditions in this letter that the utilities have to commit to? It seemed to some that this was rather arbitrary, that someone sitting in AEA could just come up with a set of conditions on their own that a utility would have to meet to become a member of GRETC. So this section was changed to have the Alaska Energy Authority establish in regulations the form and substance of this letter of intent, to give them time to establish these regulations. The deadline was moved again from July 30, 2010 to December 31, 2010. And then the effectiveness of membership in GRETC was moved back from August 16, 2010 to now on line 9. It says January 31, 2011. Essentially a month after the deadline for submitting this letter of intent. And Madam Co-Chair, sections 5 and 6 are the effective dates for this legislation. The wording in 5 and 6, those were changed a bit from previous committee substitutes to reflect that section 1 had been removed, which I think in the Senate committee substitute was the legislative intent section regarding reviewing in 5 years whether continued RCE oversight was necessary. Essentially reduce the numbers of sections in section 5 and 6 to two each, and change the effective date in Section 1, again, from August 16, 2010 to January 31, 2011.
Okay. Is there questions for Ron from members? Representative Tuck has a question for you, Ron.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me find my page real quick. On page 4, line 12, we were talking about directors may not receive a salary. In a previous version, version A, we had corporation may pay directors a meeting fee, per diem, and travel expenses, and then add a provision in there up to a maximum amounts permitted to be paid under AS 3920180. Any idea why that was removed?
Representative Tuck, through the co-chair, I can only guess at why that was removed, that it would allow the corporation to act more like a corporation than to be restricted to paying fees or per diem or travel expenses according to the state practices.
Okay. Representative Johansson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a question. I just wanted to point out that I appreciate the work that Ron Miller did. I know he gets paid to do what we ask him to do, but it was very professional and easy and to work with. I appreciate his time and professionalism.
Thank you. Thank you.
And through the co-chair, thank you, Representative Johansson, that just doing what the committee asks. And had a great colleague there in Jeff Turner to work with.
Thank you for that. Are there any other questions, Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then on page 5, line 21 to 23, the board shall appoint a chief executive officer. The chief executive officer may not be a director and serves at the pleasure of the board. Can a member, an employee that has under membership, can an employee of a utility that's a member but not necessarily on the board of directors be able to serve as chief executive officer?
Through the co-chair, Representative Tuck, there's nothing that would prohibit that now in current language. That the board could go out and seek an executive director from the staff of one of the member utilities.
Madam Co-Chair.
Representative Edgman.
And to, if I could just amplify what Ron just said, it's hard for me to imagine shareholders or the membership of an individual utility allowing probably a well-paid employee to have two jobs. that would be my sort of editorial to that comment or question by Representative Tuck.
That's right, Madam Co-Chair. My answer was based on the assumption that they would hire from an executive director or other employee from the staff and not have receiving two paychecks, but they would be sole employees of this new energy and transmission corporation. And you probably have within the employment contracts of the upper management within existing utilities provisions about what they can do once they leave the employ of that utility.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then on page 6 on under membership, line 6, the membership may provide member benefits solely to the members of the corporation. Was there discussion of what type of benefits there would be? Is it like utility benefits? Is it more like retirement benefits that can be consolidated amongst all the utilities to provide for all the employees, or is there, what kind of benefits are they looking at?
Through the co-chair, Mr. Tuck, I think you hit on your first assumption that this was utility benefits, or utility benefits and services that a energy and transmission corporation would provide to its utility members, and not employment benefits or personnel benefits.
So the intention, Madam Chair. Thank you. So the intention isn't that they can consolidate employment insurance or anything like that, but there could be, I guess, some corporate insurance benefits that can apply to all the members. Is that possible?
That's possible through the co-chair. It's possible, Representative Tuck, but if in the future the corporation, after it becomes fully functioning, I don't think you would want to prevent that corporation from being able to aggregate sort of the economies of scale of its members if they could provide better insurance through an insurance pool or some other type of benefit.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Miller?
Madam Co-Chair,
Representative Edgman,
if the time has arrived, I will present an amendment.
I think if there's no other questions for Ron, I think that would be a good time for members. I don't know if you've all had enough time to put your amendments together, but I know Representative Peterson has an amendment. Representative Edgman has an amendment. Are there other amendments that members want to offer at this time? I think what we'll do is we'll go through the amendment process, and then I would ask either Jim Strandberg from AEA or Brian Bjorkquist to make some follow-up comments on the CS that he has before us, just to point out anything that we may have missed or unintended consequences that we've done to our favorite bill. And then I think we'll be ready to move the bill to its next committee that time. So with that, Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I would move amendment number one.
Jack, I thought this was a Peterson amendment.
Actually, that's good. You object for this purpose of the discussions, and Representative Edgman, if you want to explain your amendment.
Thank you. Amendment number one would, on page 4, line 12, item G, would remove the words after directors may not receive a, so if you cross out may not receive a, and then substitute it with shall receive no. So with amended language, it would read director shall receive no salary. And the purpose of the amendment is to state in a more concise manner, a more definitive manner, that the directors are unable to receive a salary under the bill.
Okay. Is there any questions on the amendment?
I remove my objection.
Thank you. With that amendment number, any other objections? If that amendment number one is passed the committee.
Madam Co-Chair.
Representative Edgman.
I would offer conceptual amendment number two.
I'll object for discussion.
And in the same location at the end of item G, I would insert pay directors a reasonable meeting fee. So I'd insert the word reasonable, or whatever word that the bill drafter believes is appropriate.
Okay, I'll remove my objection. Is there any further objection?
Just a question.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it's going to say pay directors a reasonable meeting fee per diem or travel expenses. Is that correct?
That's correct, Representative Peterson.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll remove my objection. With that, conceptual amendment number two is passed the committee. Are there other amendments? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've actually sort of discussed this one already. We talked a little bit about members of the Alaska National Guard, and I think I don't know if it's important whether they receive a state pension to be considered state employees. And the representative to my left and I both have a large number of military members who live in our districts, and I don't want them to be excluded from the possibility of serving on this very, very important public corporation. And so I would like to move this amendment.
Object.
Well, I guess we'll call it amendment number 3.
Representative Peterson, there's been an objection. Do you want to speak to your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It just would say, for the purposes of this section, state employee means any employee of the state of Alaska, except for persons whose only employment with the state is as a member of the Alaska National Guard, State Defense Forces, or similar military organization. That way, they would be included in this bill for sure. That way, everyone would know that our intent was not to, to leave them out.
Is Brian Bjorkquist online?
Yes, I am. For the record, this is Brian Bjorkquist. I'm a senior assistant attorney general for the state of Alaska.
Brian, just for clarification, we're not state employees don't include National Guard by definition of statute, correct?
I am not sure about the answer to that. I know that the state has, Madam Co-Chair, I know that the state has military and veterans affairs, and they deal with the National Guard, but I do not know the employment status of National Guard members.
Okay, thank you.
Question?
Representative Peterson.
Is there a section of the law that we could mention in here that would have a definition of what state employees are, or do we need that? What do you think?
Representative Peterson, I would have hoped that you would have done a little research on the amendment before you offered the amendment. I don't have the questions to your answers, and so answers to your questions. So I'm not sure that would be something that I would have hoped you would have done a little research. So before you brought the amendment to the committee,
Representative Co-Chair.
Representative Edmund.
Representative Peterson, you sit on the next committee that this bill goes to, Labor and Commerce. Is that correct?
Yep.
No, you don't. Okay. I guess I would offer that maybe this is a question that could be considered in the next committee, given that the intent is to move this bill along its way and with the few days left in session.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not trying to hold the bill up, and if Fledge Legal could check into this point and provide an answer to that question to the next committee, that would be fine with me.
Thank you. Do you want to remove your amendment?
I'll withdraw my amendment number 3. Thank you.
Yeah. I've retained my objection.
We do have one other amendment, just for the committee's information, it's an amendment. It doesn't have an offered by a representative. This is an amendment that we have discussed in committee. It deals with the Army and their utility that's a subsidiary of Doyon. And it deals with making sure that this utility, and specifically this utility, has the ability to form within GRETC, and it has some clarifying language that members, I would encourage members to look at, and I will be passing this amendment on to the next committee chair in Labor and Commerce to have him look at. Right now, I'm not sure we have anybody that could walk us through the amendment in the audience. So with that, I'm going to send this amendment on with the bill when we move it out of committee to Labor and Commerce and have them take up that amendment. Oh, Bruce is on. Bruce, are you online?
Yes, Madam Chair, I am.
Do you have the amendment in front of you?
Yes, I believe I have the same version as you would have.
Okay. Do you want to just walk us through the amendment and then see if the committee's comfortable with adopting this in this committee before we move it on?
Absolutely, Madam Chair.
Madam Co-Chair, I don't think the members have a copy.
What's the copy look like?
We'll just take a brief at ease and get some copies. back on the record. Bruce, if you want to, all the members have the amendment now. If you want to just walk us through the amendment.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair. For the record, my name is Bruce Tangeman. I'm Chief Financial Officer for Doyon Utilities. We represent the Army. The first portion of the amendment refers to page 6, line 9 and 10. It removes the, if approved by a two-thirds majority vote of the board, and replaces it with upon application for membership. We feel that if somebody is bringing something to the table, especially for electric utility, it should not be left up to a vote of the board. The second portion of that is number one, right underneath that section that addresses the municipal and cooperative section. It removes a municipal or cooperative and adds an. This opens it up to any electric utility that is interested in joining. The next part is page 6, line 17, C. It also addresses the cooperative and municipal aspect. It replaces or it removes affiliated electric utility and replaces it with any other entity may become an affiliate member, but shall have no representation on the board of directors in accordance with AS 42 dot. The next portion, page 6, line 19, section D, it adds NY, so any member. The next portion refers to page 7, line 1, and it includes the corporation but remain an affiliate member of the corporation. Section G, page 7, line 7, it adds at the end of that sentence, as of the effective date of the withdrawal. And it also adds section H, notwithstanding the foregoing provisions, the corporation by a majority vote of the board may waive any notice periods in this section. The next portion is refers to page 16, line 14, section 10. Public utility member means this also removes the municipal or cooperative requirement and opens it up to any electric utility. And then the final portions refer to page 17 and page 18, where the six other utilities are listed. The amendment adds number 7 and lists Doyon Utilities, LLC. On page 17, after line 18, and page 18, after line 16.
Representative Edgeman.
Thank you. Did you have your hand? Just trying. Okay. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Not for the purposes of expressing any opinion on the amendment, but to go back to some earlier questions I had about bringing sort of this business model into the Gretzky concept. I think I would support your earlier comments about maybe putting this, or passing this amendment on to the next committee so that they could have a larger discussion, I think, is warranted by inserting this into the bill. And again, I'm not saying that I support it or I oppose it, but I just don't know enough about it at this point to really have an opinion on it. And given the lateness of the hour, Madam Co-Chair, I would recommend that we maybe send some kind of letter or some kind of expression of intent from the committee that we want this considered at the next committee of that the bill goes to.
Thank you, Representative Edgeman. Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I will go with the will of the committee if that's what everybody would like to do, is to move this amendment to the next committee and have them deal with it. Or I'm also willing to make the amendment, have it incorporated in any conceptual amendments that go with it, so it flows with the bill, so the next committee has it to look at. I think it's vital that we include the Army in this for various reasons, but I almost think it might be a little bit easier for the next committee if it was incorporated in, and I think we could do it pretty fast. We've had very thorough discussion previously with Bruce and then again this morning, and this is the same amendment that we had last week, so I know there's nothing new that's been added to it, but if there's objection, I'll, just as long as I'm on records. But
Madam Co-Chair, I just had occasion to talk with Mr. Strandberg very briefly in the back of the room, and he indicated that there might be some outstanding questions still out there in terms of what the impact of doing this to the overall bills. And I agree. I don't think I've got a clear understanding myself. So if we put it in the bill now, we're putting it in really, you know, arguably not understanding the full ramifications of doing so. So I think I'd be a little bit more comfortable with expressing the next committee that we're fine with them taking it up.
Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And out of respect to the other co-chair, I absolutely understand where you're coming from. This committee wants to do the right thing, and we'll just follow it through with the next. And so I will respect that and not make a motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dahlstrom. And I did talk to the chief of staff for the next chairman of Labor and Commerce, and they are aware of the amendment, and they do have it on their agenda to take up in Labor and Commerce. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to just express my opinion on this so far. I don't have any opposition to Doyon being one of the seven, I suppose, but I'm not sure if I'm comfortable with them being one of the four minimum to require the corporation. I think there should be some sort of language that if we get the four, they can be a fifth or be one of them. But I'm not sure just not understanding the full ramifications right now, if I'm totally comfortable with them being one of the four minimum. And I'm not sure on the allowing anyone to become affiliate member under this corporation. I think we should keep it to utilities and be utility-driven. I don't want banking institutions and so on and so forth to become members of this. I think it should be defined and should be limited in scope. But that's just on the surface, just going through the amendment real fast with the amendment sponsor.
Thank you, Representative Tuck. Good points. Representative Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a brief follow-up to Representative Tuck. I think as we go through this, it'll become clearer to folks that what the military has created is a utility. It's not a banking institution or anything. It is simply dealing with utilities. But obviously, there are questions that need to be answered. So we'll move forward with that in the next committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dahlstrom. And I think Bruce did a good job of pointing out that they are a utility. They're just not designed as a utility like as described in the bill that we have before us, Representative Tuck.
And I agree that they are an electric utility, but in C of the 425050 of the amendment says it takes out affiliated electric utility and puts in other entities. So I'm not saying that they don't follow that definition. I'm saying it's on the first page of the amendment. On there's no line numbers, but C.
Okay.
I'm not saying that they're not an affiliated electric utility. I believe that they are, but by taking that language out, we're opening it up to any type of membership, and that's what I'm concerned about.
Thank you, Representative Johansson.
Thank you. I was doing my Max Grunberg imitation.
It's way too early for that.
It's way too early. I'm not a morning person. Two things. One, Bruce is a former employee of this body, very familiar with the procedures, and I can imagine that if he's not doing it right now while he's listening, he will as soon as he's done is to start contacting members of the next committee. So I have no doubt this will be brought up at the next committee for discussion, so I have great comfort. Second thing is I appreciate the position of the rules chair. That's why in individual recommendations we have the amend column. And I think I might even put amend on there because I think I like the concept. I'm not sure yet. But that gives me great comfort, and it should to the rules chair that she likes the bill but would like to change something to it. So,
thank you. Representative Edgman.
And Bruce, just so you know that the chief of staff for the chairman of the Labor and Commerce Committee has been in the hearing this morning and has heard the entire discussion.
Thank you. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we haven't heard any feedback from the other utilities that are included in this bill and how they feel about Doyon, a possibility of being a member. I just thought I'd throw that in there.
And that's a good point, Representative Peterson. I will tell you that as a co-chair of the Energy Committee and the co-chairs, both Representative Edgman and I have talked, I'm incredibly disappointed that only three of the six utilities that this bill affects bothered to show up at the Energy Committee. And I've left public testimony open, thinking that maybe HEA and GVA and MLMP would come and comment on a bill that affects them greatly. But to no avail, Representative, we've called HEA, we've called GVA, so has AEA. We tried to reach out to those three utilities that this bill affects greatly, that they just haven't bothered to even come to our committee or discuss any of the correspondence that we've had with HEA. So I'm a little disappointed, and I thought that, you know, given the importance of this bill, especially with what the utilities have been saying to me and the emails that I've received, that how incredibly important and earth-shattering this bill is, that three of the six utilities just didn't even bother to give us their opinion. So I'm a little disappointed in those three utilities. And if it's such an important bill, I can't imagine what could keep them from the seven meetings that we've had on the Gretzky bill with public testimony open for five of them. So I just want members to be fully aware of that, that we haven't heard from Golden Valley, we haven't heard from Homer Electric, and we haven't heard from Municipal Light and Power. I have had conversations with Municipal Light and Power and with the mayor's office about Gretzky, and I can tell you secondhand that it's not earth-shattering or earth-moving for MLMP. They don't, while they support the concept, they're not thinking that this bill is a must-have for this session. I understand Chugach's position and MEA's position. I have no idea what Golden Valley thinks of this bill. I have no idea what HEA thinks of this bill. So when we talk about forming a co-op with four utilities, and I've only heard from three, I sit back and wonder, what in the heck are we even doing? Do we even need this bill? So those are my comments on HEA and Golden Valley, and hearing from only three of the six utilities that this bill affects. And you know, I'm glad that Doyon has stepped up as maybe the sixth or seventh utility, which maybe we need to think about making an affiliate and going from an affiliate to an actual member, Representative Tuck, to your point, so we could have the assurances that our bill's actually, the governor's bill's actually going to do something. So with that, I'm going to close public testimony, seeing that I don't have anybody online from those three utilities. Public testimony is closed. Is there a committee discussion on the bill?
Madam Co-Chair, I would at this juncture make a motion to move the bill out of committee, if that's appropriate.
That would be great. Is there any objections to moving the bill out of committee?
With that, Madam Co-Chair, I move CS for House Bill 182, Version P, with attached fiscal notes and accompanying individual recommendations. I would make a motion to move the bill out of committee.
Is there any objections? HB 182 has passed the House Energy Committee.
Yay.
And we're all going to go through Gretzky withdrawals. And with that, I will adjourn. If there's no other business before the committee, I will adjourn the committee at 8:10. Thank you, members.